going to welcome the next speaker, and the theme of his presentation is currency prediction model and hedging. Again, you did get the chairman's permission and mine to ask as many tough questions as you would like. He is already standing by, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Sinjin Bunkel, who is from Sanlam Alternative Asset Management. Please join us.
All right. I think with an introduction like that, it's difficult to continue. It's a pleasure to be here. I have spoken at the conference before. As an engineer, I apologize for bringing down the aggregate IQ, but it is what it is. Certainly, you know, my congratulations to Kevin. I think his discussion was certainly, you know, kind of very interesting, and certainly gives a significant, you know, kind of counterpoint to some of what we're going to run through today, which is really looking at things from a very kind of quantitative perspective. I think, you know, kind of obviously machine learning and AI and its utilization across multiple industries is certainly proliferating. You know, it's very hyped at the moment, and specifically in the large language model space, something that is, you know, kind of globally driving a lot of where the world is going. That does feel like the genie's out of the bottle. But I think the key is trying to look at kind of practical examples of where we can utilize some of this technology to assist us in making some kind of investment decisions. You know, obviously, in terms of looking at investing into the global space, it's a critical aspect of what we do, both as actuaries or from an actuarial perspective as well as from an investment perspective. I think in my kind of 30 years in the investment markets, I have noticed that there is a slight differentiation between how a trained actuary would tend to allocate into the global space as opposed to someone who's kind of trained in modern portfolio theory and Markowitz theory. And I think a little bit of it is to do with the education and the type of education that actuaries receive, but a lot of it also is a kind of structural aspect in the sense that actuaries tend to deal a lot with either pension fund industry, where the ability to move in the pension fund industry is a lot slower, and just the process in terms of being able to run through a pension fund investment committee takes a lot longer, as well as the fact that you know, a lot of times we're considering, you know, specifically in the actuarial space, a RAND liability, and the utilization or exposing a RAND liability to a dollar impact doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. And so those considerations are quite differentiated from your typical investment management decision, where you would really look at, you know, kind of Markowitz theory. And the tendency there is that, you know, certainly when the changes were made in terms of the prudential limits, we saw that asset managers moved very quickly into the global space, whereas the actuarial space, you know, is still fairly slow to move. And even some of the consultants that we deal with, you know, are still, you know, discussing, you know, kind of picking up those prudential or external limits with their client base. But I think one of the significant components of that, of course, is you get the diversification to an asset set that we desperately need, but you introduce, you know, quite a lot of significant volatility in terms of what's happening within the exchange rate. So having some sense of what the exchange rate is doing is kind of a critical component of that investment decision. I think just in terms of, you know, how traditionally we look at, you know, the exchange rate component, you know, by far and away the most utilized model is the purchasing power parity model. And very simplistically, you know, it's just valuation of a set of goods in one jurisdiction versus another. You know, I think from an economics perspective, you know, there's a lot of work that's gone into looking at the velocity of money and those comparatives. But principally speaking, you know, it really looks at how much something costs relative to another basket. And I mean, this particular utilization is what, you know, the Sanlam Investment Group as a house utilizes. We look very much at PPP in terms of trying to elucidate where we think, you know, the RAND is going, along with relative strength in terms of where the GDP components are going, as well as, you know, other kind of economic metric or econometric modeling as well. Just looking at PPP from 1979, you can see that there certainly is a mean reversion in terms of the movement of the currency pair itself relative to the differential, inflation differential. I think what's really interesting is that, you know, in the USA, since 1979, a basket of goods cost you about four times today what it did in 1979. I'm going to ask everyone just to kind of get a number in their head in terms of what they think the CPI movement has done for us in the South African context. And from just a multiplier perspective, I would ask someone to shout it out, but people don't generally shout it out. But if you've all got that number in your head, and if you said 36 times, that's a good call, right? So it is incredible just how much the impact of inflation is in the South African context relative to, you know, certainly the global context. What is interesting is that since 2015, the purchase power parity has really struggled to suggest that, you know, or kind of worked significantly well with the rand. The rand hasn't mean reverted back to those purchase power parity levels over the last almost 10 years. And so there's definitely something more systemic going on in terms of the purchasing power parity compared to, you know, what's happening. And I think a lot of what kind of Kevin discussed previously, you know, points in that direction. If we look at kind of option pricing theory, you know, typically in terms of pricing optionality, we're looking at nominal interest rates. This curve is the nominal interest rates and the differential between the 10-year rate and the movement in the rand itself. Again, we can see quite a fair degree of, you know, mean reversion around the nominal interest rate differential. And interestingly enough, from a nominal rate differential, it's kind of suggesting that we're fairly well priced at about 18.50 to the rand. So the nominal rates and the quantitative component in terms of how we price option theory is suggesting that we're fairly well priced at about 18.50. Just in terms of the broad analyst consensus at the moment, generally speaking, there's an expectation that the rand dollar is a bit oversold at the moment. And if you look at most of the economic kind of thinking in terms of where the expectation will be, there's an expectation that the rand's probably going to be at about 17.50 to 17 in about a year and a half's time, which is quite an interesting thing to kind of bear in mind. So, you know, I think we come from a very kind of quantitative approach. We've had a significant amount of discussion with Arthur Camp, who is the head economist at Sanlam, and we run through a variety of different components in terms of what he believes drives the rand dollar. Significantly, they look at the PPP. They also look at the nominal interest rates, along with most economists at this moment in time who are looking at the PPP as a kind of general indicator of where they think the rand is. The expectation is that the rand will come back to about 16.50 over the next 3 years. In discussing with Arthur, just in terms of what else they looked at, his sense was that, you know, they utilize, because South Africa is such a significant driver from a commodity perspective, that the commodity complex must have some significant impact in terms of where the rand dollar should be. But he didn't really have a good sense of what particularly that was. And so he kind of highlighted that he thought gold and silver, or certainly gold, has been something that has been discussed significantly with a lot of his peers, and that the gold price should maybe have some kind of relationship in terms of the rand dollar. But, you know, he kind of broadly just suggested that we should also, you know, particularly have a look at that. And I think what we looked at then is how do we build a feature set that we can utilize into a machine learning model that will give us some sense of how the, you know, the rand dollar will move. And a lot of the work that we do particularly is mostly focused in a one-year horizon. So we created a problem set in terms of looking at where the rand dollar would be in 1 year's time, and we create a basket of features that we can then put into a machine learning process. I think broadly speaking, just in the machine learning space, there are two kind of well-recognized models. We look specifically at neural networks and decision trees. Neural networks are kind of based on the way our brains are structured in terms of how the neural interfaces work. And decision trees are kind of more based in terms of how our decision-making processes work. I think just to look very quickly at the approach that we utilize, because our experience is that decision trees tend to give better results than neural networks. So I just want to just quickly look at a decision tree. And principally, a decision tree is nothing more than a technique where we bisect the data, or we partition the data in a way that we get two distinct significant baskets that have obviously a different statistical quality to them. So this is an example of looking at a machine learning process to kind of elucidate or see whether someone's got cancer. Particularly as a data scientist, you wouldn't need to know particularly what these features are. But here you can see that there's a data set of people with and without cancer. The worst radius is the initial partition, and you can see if we partition across worst radius, and I probably am not the only one who doesn't really understand what the worst radius means, but we can see that the partition itself creates two distinctly significantly differentiated data sets. And we can partition that further until we get to a point where we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 buckets, and within those buckets there's a high degree of significance in terms of whether you are malignant, or whether the cancer cells are either malignant or benign. This can then be utilized in creating two types of problems. The one is we can look at it from a statistical perspective in terms of taking the aggregate. So we can construct it then as a regression problem, where we can actually try and predict as in terms of the aggregate of each of those buckets what the outcome will be. Or you can utilize it as a classification problem. So what we specifically looked at in terms of looking at the rand dollar is we took these macroeconomic factors as we had kind of pointed out and as we've managed to discuss with our economics team. We look at a whole lot of commodity factors, and in this case we just looked at a whole lot of features from the commodity complex in terms of those 6 or 7 different commodity creations, and put those as commodity factors into the actual modeling itself. And then we took multiple other factors on a basket of global currencies to see if there would be any, you know, kind of additional opportunity to try and predict where we thought the rand dollar would be in a year's time. We broke it into about 100 data sets at the bottom. I think one of the key aspects is the bins that you break it into the bottom, you can break it into as many bins as you like. And in some sense, you can completely overfit the data, because you can put it, if you've got 8,000 observations and you've got 8,000 bins at the bottom, you will have a perfect fit on the data set. So you've got to be very cautious just in terms of how you fit the data and what you do. We started with about 15 years of data to train the model, and then we worked as an expanding window. And at each point in time, we can compare what we have as a prediction on the rand dollar versus the true value. We utilized the Pearson coefficient because we found, and when we have a look at the results now, it'll be fairly obvious, but the relationship between the prediction and the actual outcome is nonlinear. And we tend to see more volatility in the actual space, and that's as a result of not being able to in any way predict idiosyncratic moves in the market. And so the Pearson coefficient, which takes into consideration the covariance and the correlation between the true value and the predicted value, is kind of then a good compromise on that. So if we have a look at the results, The orange line is the true value in terms of the one-year prediction on the rand dollar, and the blue line is the prediction. I think the first thing to kind of look at in terms of the rand dollar is that if you just went long, in other words, you were always long the dollar, short the rand, you'd be correct about 75% of the time. So it's obviously not a normalized series in the sense that there's obviously a bit of skew in the series, and that it's not, you know, kind of normal from a distribution perspective. So the big key here is, you know, how many of the downsides can we capture? And we capture downside about 8% of the time. But that downside capture on about 8% of the time leads to quite a significant opportunity in terms of how we can then elucidate where we think the RAND's going to go. And it also gives us a sense on what we can utilize to try and increase or improve some of the return on the underlying dollar assets. And the way that we do this, I think one of the really interesting components in terms of where machine learning is going is that, you know, a lot of people, especially in the global space, are utilizing machine learning not so much to actually try and get a real sense of where the interest, you know, the actual entity is going itself. So initially there was a lot of proliferation of black boxes and people were trading a lot on black boxes. In this sense now, what is clear is people are looking at the factor importance. And so factor importance is quite a useful tool in that it kind of give you some degree of certainty and it gives you an idea of what you should look out for in terms of trying to see what is driving the RAND or driving whatever the process is. And we can see in this space, the feature importance that gives us the biggest pickup is the nominal rate differentials. So in terms of the option pricing theory and the quantitative theory, we get better, you know, predictive power in the nominal differential signal than we do in the underlying PPP signal. You can see the PPP signal is there. It's about 6 on the list, that CPI diff signal. But what's also interesting is that, you know, from a commodity perspective, you know, some of the risk measures in the copper market and the oil market also give us better pickup and better residual, you know, on the residuals, better performance than what we're seeing particularly in the underlying PPP. So that's also something that is kind of a full, you know, and in itself a full industry that's developing in the global space is trying to understand what features are actually driving the underlying commodities or the underlying process itself. How can we utilize this? Well, you know, we do a lot of work in the currency hedging space, both for large pension fund clients as well as corporates. And in one of the big complexities is trying to understand when is the right time to actually make that transition into the RAND dollar space. If you've got assets there, it makes a lot of sense to potentially hedge them. If you are thinking about moving assets into the global space and putting them to work in the US dollar space, it makes that timing impact can be significant. And certainly if you're a corporate and you have a dollar asset, it might make sense to then potentially look at hedging that asset in order to protect some of the revenue on your balance sheet. I think you know, what we utilize typically and what a lot of clients utilize is zero-cost options, so particularly option strategies that give you some protection to the RAND dollar. And I think using the modeling process allows us to put, you know, zero-cost fences or zero-cost collars in place roughly at the right time to give a sense of when is the best time to actually hedge. And if we look at what that does for you in terms of the potential opportunity in the global space, we can see that significantly reduces the volatility of a dollar asset whilst actually increasing the return profile. And that's kind of a kind of key aspect to the exercise as well. I think just from a conclusion perspective, you know, it's not that we're really trying to predict with pinpoint accuracy where we think the currency is going. We're really just trying to utilize some of these, you know, kind of machine learning processes, integrate them with a, you know, kind of very solid macroeconomic fundamental base and structure as well, and then utilize those in predicting some expectation of where we think the RAND dollar is going to be. And ultimately, this can significantly enhance, you know, outcomes for clients, in the sense that we are able to potentially give a pickup in return whilst reducing the volatility and the underlying, you know, exposure in the currency side as well.
Just checking if we have any questions from the audience. There we go.
Pleasure.
Really, really interesting. Thanks. You need to cover some of this when you guys do your next report. Absolutely. Back to us, because we do actually use your currency overlay to manage our portfolio. And we actually, just for everyone else's benefit, we found it quite useful when we actually upped our offshore exposure to 45% when Reg 28 came through, because we wanted the fundamental offshore exposure, but we weren't certain about wanting that level of currency risk. But my specific question, so this machine learning model that you referred to, is it something that you guys developed in-house at APSA? I will get that in there. you moved over to Sanlam as part of that transaction. Is it an in-house model? Does it qualify as sort of a small language model? Or is it a medium language model? Just a bit more around the modeling. Thanks.
Sure. Largely, you know, as kind of Fakmita points out, we have done significant work with the team in hedging a lot of their currency exposure. And as a result of that, a lot of this development has largely been to support that. It is all internally developed. It is a gradient-boosted decision tree model, which is a supervised trained model. So it's not unsupervised, it's supervised. And I think the key to developing this is really to try and enhance... And again... different clients utilize this in different ways. We have some clients who simply just come to us and tell us to hedge the currencies, and we have other clients who really have a process in their investment committee where we can try add as much value as we can, and the development of this tool is really to try and enhance that, from just a practical perspective. I mean, no one... Yeah, and in terms of where the model is calling the rand dollar at the moment... It's not very constructive on the rand dollar at the moment. It's quite unconstructive. And I think, Kevin's discussion prior to that kind of highlights why. It's certainly taking a lot of data that's, kind of been proliferated over the last 10 years and taking that into account. But certainly if we see those turning around, we should see some of the inflation numbers and nominal rate components turn around, and hopefully we see some strengthening in that. I hope that helps.
Right. Thank you so much, Sanjay.
Thank you. Appreciate awesome. It. Thank you.
Let's give him a round of applause. That is Sinjin Bunker, who is from Sunlight.